where now it's like, hey, there it's working. Hi, this is Paul, and this is kind of a randos conversation, but I've met Eric, and he's another CRC pastor, and he noted the conversation I had with Dave a while ago, and I only have an hour slot, so we can't give it the full treatment, but Eric, why don't you begin by introducing yourself?
Sure. So I'm Eric Slickabeer. I'm a pastor at Grace Valley CRC, which is in German Valley, Illinois. So we're just a little west of Rockford. So we're in the cornfields, sort of almost Wisconsin, almost Iowa. But it's a...
How long has that church been there?
Actually, it's over 150 years. It's actually an interesting part of my story I'll maybe get to, but we were doing a church plant in Houston, and it was a sort of missional community house church kind of church plant in Houston. And then I came here, and the very first thing they did was their 150th anniversary. So it was like super whiplash from Houston to the cornfields. And Wow. It's been here a long time, and so it's been a really nice sort of stable time for our family, which is different than what we've had before. So it's been really good.
All right, so let's get into your story.
So I was born and raised in Kalamazoo, so we're not quite Grand Rapids. You're talking about this morning. I saw you talk about
Kellogg cereal.
Yeah. Well, that's Battle Creek, but you talked about Grand Rapids as Jerusalem. Yeah. This is like Galilee or something. So, I grew up in a, nice, stable, middle class house. Went to the, Christian school. We went to a RCA church in Kalamazoo. Pretty typical. It's a church that I, moved from the city into the, towards the edges of town. I remember that when I was, 5, 6, 7. So I remember, being part of that. They were building a new building, and it was pretty exciting and all of that. And some vague memories of that church, having a 100-year anniversary back then too. But I think it was, pretty typical, pretty happy childhood. We didn't ever, really need anything. We didn't have everything, but, one sort of interesting thing about my family, my mom had a really tragic childhood. Her mom died in like a freak accident while she was in the car with her brother and sister. So they were all young, and it was just a totally freak thing. But, and then a few years after that, her brother died of leukemia when he was 5. And so, and then her dad had some mental health stuff, and he was not able to take care of them. So they were raised mostly by her grandparents, who were wonderful people. And, they had a really good childhood with them. But one of the things I'm realizing now is how much sort of anxiety was in our family, just because, there's always a fear something could happen.
Yep.
And so I learned, pretty early on that one of my jobs was to lower the anxiety, which I'm learning now as a pastor, that's a good skill to have if you can do it well. There's bad ways to do that and good ways to do that. But that was, so that's a thing, just sort of a piece that's in the background there. And I think probably part of, what I see helping in my job now. So, it was a pretty typical RCA church, and we went there, went to the Christian school, graduated, and I had no idea what I wanted to do. So I went to the community college. I could play baseball there. So I did that and get some stuff out of the way while I figured out what it was. And the first day there, I was waiting for my first class in the morning, and who's now my wife, walked down the hall. I had gone to high school with her as a small high school, so we knew each other, but we weren't friends. And then you get into a different environment and you see someone, and that was pretty comforting. So talked to her and we started hanging out more. And
what a great story.
Yeah. So that was good. And by the time I got done with 2 years there, I still didn't know what I wanted to do, but I liked that part of things. So we got engaged and married, and we got married when we were 20. So,
wow.
So yeah, that was the one piece of my life I felt like I knew where it was going. And so got married, and then I started working construction because actually both of my parents worked in offices for construction companies. So I had one was a masonry construction, and they had let me work at their shop in the summers and clean things up and fix the mixers and, you know, just sort of that sort of stuff. And so then when we got married and I needed to have a job, that was the next step. So I was a laborer for a few years. Then I became a bricklayer. But I guess I would say this is sort of where sort of my faith sort of changed right around this time when we got married. I would say what I received was pretty kind of, you know, linear, logical. You know, we were taught the creeds and the confessions, and I knew how to say all the things I was supposed to say. And I never, you know, really had significant doubts about that. I, you know, believed it and affirmed it. And my pastor, you know, I was a senior, and he said, "I think you should make profession of faith." And I said, "Okay." And and I did it. And that was, you know, sort of, it was just generic, sort of. Yeah. That's how I would describe it. I knew that I knew all the things. So we got married, and we were living in a house, one of my wife's parents' rental houses. They have a farm in Martin. So it's in between Kalamazoo and Grand Rapids. So if you take that drive, there's a drag strip right along 131 there. And that's Martin. That's what they're known for. So she grew up there in the CRC church in East Martin. So we're trying to decide, then we're young, we're married. Do we go to her church? So that was, sort of, you know, small, very traditional. Do we go to my church that was, you know, had a few more people, a few more stuff, but it was 30 minutes away? Do we go find another church and start fresh? Because, you know, there's 25 of them in Kalamazoo. So so we were trying to sort through that. And I think it was, you know, maybe a time when I really prayed and sort of expected God to answer. And we got some good advice about, you know, just being where you can be available and being where you can serve and, you know, be a part of the community rather than driving all the way and not being able to participate as much. And we thought that made sense. So we kind of made a decision to go there. And when we got there, you know, the next week, it felt like God was confirming that. Mm-hmm. And that was like the first time where it felt like personal, like God is like not just a generic, you know, he died for the world, but like, oh, he's working in a specific way. Mm-hmm. And so that was sort of really kind of changed things for me. Mm-hmm. So that was now this is a real thing. Mm-hmm. And so we were there for a couple of years. We moved back to Kalamazoo and bought a house. And about that time, one of our really good friends got hired as the youth person at the church I grew up in. So we ended up back there, and we really jumped into all of the church stuff. You know, a few years we were volunteering to do the youth ministry with my friend, and we were, you know, did a thing as a deacon a couple of years in, and we were just really involved in all of that stuff. And that was good. But then we were bumping up against a bunch of things. The church was, there was some good things happening, and then we want to keep doing more things, and you're bumping up against all of the traditional stuff. And so my friend Aaron, when we talk, he'd say, well, you know, we had this running joke, like, well, when we start a church, we're going to do it this way. So we don't have to, you know, fight all of these rules and hoops. And so that sort of became like a running joke when we would bump up against things. And so we did that for a while. And then while that was happening, I was a bricklayer. So every day was sort of a randos conversation. you know, it's a skilled trade, but the skill that you're doing is pretty repetitious. And so you're working sort of arm to arm with a bunch of guys all day long. And so, and I love that part of it. You're there, you're outside, you're, you know, doing physical work, and you're, you know, talking and chatting and, you know, sometimes joking, sometimes, you know, things get serious, yeah. But that was every day. Yeah. But I was noticing, like, well, one piece of it was my friend had just come out of like Reformed Bible College, and he was, you know, talking a lot about the worldview, the creation, redemption, that sort of piece. And I think what I had gathered, you know, maybe it wasn't ever spoken, but was that like work was good because it could, you know, you could make money so that you could bring some back to the church and support the church, and you could meet people that you could invite to church. And that's was sort of, you know, the church was the important stuff and the rest of it was not. Mm-hmm. And so he started really talking about like the way that God, Jesus is working to redeem everything and the goodness of even our work as we're creating something. And so that really impacted me and sort of changed the attitude I brought to that. And then I noticed that I would be able to have all these good conversations at work, but there was nothing that we were doing at church to try and get people to show up that they were interested in. And none of the carnivals, none of the, you know, whatever else it was, they were not, there was a divide there that was not working. And so both of those things were things like I did not receive either of these things growing up, this idea about the value of work. And we're also stuck like trying to like draw people in that aren't interested in coming. And it feels like we're just spinning our wheels all the time. And so after a while of thinking about this and having this conversation about like, well, when we started church, finally we said, well, I wonder if that's not just a joke and that's God doing something. And so that was sort of the impetus to start a seminary track. And so I explored that. I only had the undergrad community college degree. So I ended up at Cornerstone. They had an adult program then. And it was the early days of the online school. So I was one of the first people through that at Cornerstone. We had our first child. We had our one son, and then my daughter was born the week I started that program. So I was doing construction. We had two kids. And then I was trying to do school at night after, fortunately, they weren't going to bed too late. So I could do my school after they went to bed and get up and get to work and did that program. And then I went to Grand Rapids Theological Seminary. Cause I was, thinking about, you know, wanting to do the church planting thing, and Calvin wasn't doing a lot of church planting stuff in the mid, you know, 2008, I guess, is when I started. So my joke is I'm really kind of the outsider in the CRC because I went to seminary in Grand Rapids and didn't go to Calvin.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, that's unusual.
So I did that and it worked out good. You know, that's Calvin, you had to really give him 3 years of your life. And we had two kids. Our third son was born, or our third child was born during my first semester of seminary. And so I was still trying to put together some income and do all of this. We couldn't make the Calvin, you know, stop your life for 3 years work.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But I was able to do the EPMC along with it and transfer those in and not have to do
EPMC is a program that Calvin Seminary has. If you get your theological degree from a different seminary, in order to become ordained in the Christian Reformed Church, you have to go through this program where you pick up Christian Reformed Church history and a few other things to sort of help the CRC say, okay, he should know our community well enough to be able to serve as a minister within this denomination. Just want to, most people out there, when they hear EPMC, they won't have any idea what you're saying.
It's the hoops you have to jump through to get in. So we did that. Along the way, we got involved in a church plant near Kalamazoo. And then I did an internship in Fort Wayne after that. So there was a semester of seminary. I was commuting back and forth between Grand Rapids and Fort Wayne, Indiana. And so we had, you know, three kids, our oldest three. The third one will have a birthday in May. And so then we'll have 6 weeks where he'll be 15 and a 16 and a 17.
Wow.
So when we were at Synod last year and we interviewed the seminary professors, my takeaway was I'd kind of like to go back to seminary when I could remember some of it, because I made it through, but those were rough days.
Yeah, I can imagine.
We made it.
Yep.
We did that. We ended up in Grand Rapids for the last year, and by the end of all that, we were. So I'm not sure that this church planting thing is right now, because we had, you know, we were wore out just from getting there. And so maybe we can, I can find a job as a pastor at a church plant where the pastor's leaving or something. So it still has some of this, you know, missionary DNA, but isn't the old traditional thing. So I talked to some of the home missions people about that, and they said, well, just go to the church planning assessment center, because you'll at least meet the people that would know where that job is. So we went, and by the end of that, they said, we really think you should go plant a church now and not do some of this other thing. There was another church that seemed promising that we sort of expected to go to.
I should note that in the Christian Reformed Church, we don't have a bishop system where people are sort of assigned. It's much more of a kind of a broker system where, you know, churches will try to recruit their pastors. Home Missions, which is now part of Resonate, sometimes would sort of facilitate church planting, kind of a combination of the classes and Home Missions and maybe a local church, mother church. And so it's not a situation where there's a hierarchy in the Christian Reformed Church that says, Eric, you go do this. It's much more of a conversation that sort of elicits in eventually an outcome. So,
yeah. So that's, we left there. You know, we thought we had a place to go that was going to work out. And by the end of the assessment center, you know, my wife, Jana, you know, the people there, we all felt like God wanted us to, you know, actually lean into this church planning thing. So I had to call this other church that we were planning on going to visit and say, I don't think this is going to work out. And my wife is, you know, crying because, you know, we had never had anything stable, because even in construction, when it rains, you go home and you don't get paid. So yeah. After fumbling our way through all of this, like there was a promise of some stability, and we were saying no. And it was just a few minutes later that my friend Andy from Houston called and said, well, we're interested in you guys coming down here. So it wasn't like, you know, well, this is the thing then, but it was a pretty good confirmation that we could trust God was going to take care of us and get us what we needed.
What year was this?
2011.
Okay, so this was sort of at the end of the big Christian Reformed church planting push. There are a lot of Christian Reformed. Houston was one of the places that the Christian Reformed Church was trying to plant a lot of churches. We planted a number here in Sacramento. There are a few areas of the country where church planting was sort of hot, and Houston was very much one of them. So
yeah, so they had a little bit of funding available at the classes level in that time. So we went and visited and ended up down there. And,
which was Classis Rocky Mountain. Denver's a long ways from Houston.
Yes. So, yeah. So twice a year we would do that. And so I did get to take an actual vacation out there recently. But, you know, for a long time, I had been to Colorado like 6 times, but I'd never done anything but drive to the classes meeting and back to the airport. So that
nice
was
a way to see a very beautiful city.
But yeah, so we ended up in Houston, and we were working on, this was also when sort of the missional community thing was a big thing in church planting. And the idea is sort of like a network of house churches, basically, and each one has a specific focus. So that might be a neighborhood or a local school or, you know, even a, you know, hobby or something, but this is something we're interested in and we want to invest in and sort of be missionaries to a specific, you know, people. And so that's what we were trying to do. And part of that also was they had some money, but not all the money. Yep. And so we were also had to be bivocational a little bit. And so my wife and I did a photography business, and we were doing weddings and families. And while it was not our goal, we ended up doing a lot of preschool pictures. and the last year we were down there, we did preschool pictures of 1,000 preschoolers. So it was horrible.
Not bricklaying, huh? Why not bricklaying? I mean, you had background.
Well, when I did a little bit of that, some odd jobs and stuff, but you know, the work in the north was union work and paid pretty well, and the work in Houston was not and didn't pay very well. So
okay, makes sense.
So we were trying to do that, and had some good days of that and some rough days of that, and we ended up there for 5 years. We had two more kids while we were in Texas. So we had, you know, five kids now. And we're trying to start a business, and we're trying to start a church, and, you know, ups and downs in both of them. But after like 5 years, they both were sort of on the down. And it was kind of one of those things where if, you know, it's so fragile, like the church planting thing, and especially something like that. So there was one point where, you know, we thought we were close. We had a group of people we thought we could sort of hive off and start to look like what we wanted it to. And then, you know, one family group is like, I don't think we can do this anymore. And another family group moved to the other side of the, you know, Houston, and they're too far away to participate. And all of a sudden you lost a third of your people and you're sort of starting over again.
Yep.
And so, so at a certain point, kind of the momentum was just gone, and in sort of both places. And so I think it's time to wrap this up and see what's next. So that was the end of 2015. And then we, you know, well, what are we going to do now? And we bought a house, and, basically what we did is I talked to this church now in German Valley. I had done an interview with them, and we packed up our house in Houston, and we drove up here, and we did like a weekend long, you know, interview thing. You meet with the council, you preach on Sunday, and you meet all the people. And then we went up to Michigan, and we stayed in a house that family had, and we waited, and I was either going to fly back to Houston and put our stuff in a truck and send it to Michigan, or I was going to put it in a truck and send it here. And I was going to, you know, do construction or whatever while we waited if the church in German Valley didn't call. So,
well, it's interesting, you know, 2010 to 2015, that's the housing. The housing collapse starts in 2008 and just kind of keeps running. And a place like Houston, where sort of like California can tend to be boom and bust. There's a lot of things that go into this kind of stuff.
There was, and the housing part was not bad. That the specific area we were in, it was good, but there was also a lot of anxiety. That's when the oil prices were really low.
Yeah.
And so much of their economy and, you know, everybody's jobs is in the oil industry. Yeah. And so it was, you know, my whole life is like, we need gas to go down. We need gas to go down. And now we're like, we need gas to go up because all of our friends are losing their jobs. And so you just see a different perspective on the impacts of all of this stuff that you don't see until you get to a place like that.
Well, talk to me a little bit about why you like being a pastor, because, you know, at the end of a church planting thing, some people sort of quit pastoring at that point, and they're like, ah, nuts, I'm done with this ministry stuff. I can go back to bricklaying, or I can go back to photography or something like that. But you went to pastor an older church.
Yeah, so what I like is the stories and the getting to know people and hearing what God is doing in their life, and that was really what I wanted to do. And so when you do like the assessments and all of that stuff, you know, like they do the Strength Finder thing, and one of those is woo. like you're the person that, you know, gathers all of the people, right? The people just flock to you. Well, neither me or my wife have that one at all. And so we knew going in, like, this was a big ask.
Yeah.
Like, God's going to have to provide the people somewhere. But once they're there, like, we're good and we can hold people together and we can do that. So we knew from that, like, that was going to be a challenge. And so this was an opportunity to actually invest in a group of people that was here. And they were already there.
Yeah. And are you enjoying it?
I am. Actually, when we came, I came as an associate pastor. So there was another pastor here. So it's a 150-year-old church, but they towards right around the turn of the century, it was close to dying. There was home missions people told them, you know, like, you need to change or it's not going to be here.
Yeah.
And they made a lot of changes, and they actually built a brand new facility in 2010, and they've grown quite a bit. And so, you know, for people that are here that show up now, like, they have no idea of all of that history because it doesn't feel like a 150-year-old church at all.
Interesting.
So that's, you know, the chance to be somewhere settled and a chance to, like, come out of this church planting thing that was so fragile all of the time and feels like it could fall apart at any minute to come to a place that's been here for 150 years. I think, well, I can't kill that very fast. It's been here for this long. So it's been a real, real stabilizing thing for me, for our family, to just, you know that, you know, we have a place to be. And, you know, when we moved here, I think we figured out it was our 9th house and our 7th house in 4 states in like 9 years or something.
With 5 kids.
Yeah. So the joke I tell people now is that when we moved here, my wife said, this has to go well because we're living in a parsonage. And if you get fired, I'm not moving. So it's going to get really awkward. we've settled in, and it's really good. So,
So you found my channel, you found this little corner. Talk about how that happened. I mean, because some CRC pastors know what I'm doing. Some, you know, people have different opinions about it. How, you know, how did you find what's going on here?
I think I started sort of, paying attention a little bit when you were, you know, talking about some of the confessional conversations back probably maybe 2016, even when they were, you know, maybe back, was it coming that far?
I think I started talking about that in 2014.
Yeah. So
2012 even. So it's,
I think you posted some of that in the Facebook group. And so I sort of keeping my eye on some of it then. And then I think, you know, what I appreciate and what I mostly watch is the Randos conversations and I've watch very few of like the Jordan Peterson ones. What I know about him is what I see on Twitter. So I'll watch you occasionally just to moderate that and get the other side. So those are sort of the things that I like, and that's part of the piece that I don't get as much of now. Mm. Like I said, like working in construction, like all day was just, you know, talking to the people and you get some of that, but it's an interesting church in that there isn't another CRC church within 60 miles.
Yep.
So there's a few of them down by the river, the Fulton, Iowa, you know, and then there's a few of them in the suburbs, but there's none here.
Yeah.
And so instead of somewhere like Grand Rapids, where if you move out to the suburbs, you find another CRC church, as people have spread out here, they still come back because there's some RCA churches around, but there's, you know, kind of generations of people that grew up here. And even though they're, you know, 20, 30 minutes away, that's where they're driving to work. 30 minutes isn't a long drive. So, so we're sort of spread out. So people aren't dropping in to church, you know, unless there's something happening. So there, you got to be really intentional to have those conversations with people also. So, so that's sort of what I've been interested in watching you do, is you're, you know, gathering these people and hearing their stories and putting them together. And I think, like, what is it like you have a, I think one of the interesting things to me is that, like, you have, there's such a broad reach, right? Like, it's the internet, like anybody can, you know, conceivably find you. And so you talk a lot about, like, being high on openness. And I think that about myself also, but, you know, there's a lot of people that aren't. And when you're in a small community, there's a lot of people that aren't. And so how do we, you know, where do we find these people here, these people that are searching? And, you know, it's a little bit harder ask, and it's been a little bit harder because of all the pandemic stuff. So, so we were here for a few years, and then the pandemic stuff happens. And then it was a couple of years of really, you know, stuff was happening, but not in the same way. So we're sort of another interesting thing we've been noticing lately is, even though it's been 6 years, it feels like people are just now starting to really open up, and you hear a little bit more of what's going on and what's been happening. So, so that's also, you know, and some of that is the pandemic stuff, and some of that is some of what happened before and whatever. But I keep, like, how do we do more of what you're doing at a local level when finding those people is, you know, it's, you can gather a group of very divergent people pretty quickly. And, but it's a little bit harder here because there's, just in general, because you never know who's going to show up. And
and you're dealing with them in real life. It's, yes. I mean, in that sense, the internet is easy because people can look at, oh, there's faces here. There are people that are logging in. Yeah. But there's, you know, 4 billion people on the internet, and certainly you're not exposed to all of them, but, you know, YouTube too sort of, you know, prompts you out there. And even if, you know, let's say 20,000 people see a video, even if 5 people pay enough attention and have enough interest to leave a comment or follow links and get on a randos conversation, that's still, you know, that's still a tiny percentage of the potential reach. And in a, you know, I always remind people sort of the difference between the Dominican Republic and here. In the Dominican Republic, people had more time than money. Here in America, people have more money than time. And so when people actually show up to something, drive to something, and then if they're doing it regularly, that's a huge commitment. And even in church parlance, churches basically aren't even satisfied with that. We want you not only to show up, we eventually want you to volunteer and give and commit. That's a far harder thing than just people showing up to watch PVK and a Randall's conversation or something
for sure.
Like Jordan Peterson.
For sure. Yeah. So
that's a very real thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've done like a pub theology sort of group that, you know, I hope we could do some more of that. And that's, you know, worked okay for a while and got sort of shut down during COVID, and we're trying to get that going again, but it's still mostly people from here.
Yeah.
And so that's, hasn't been there, you know, hasn't quite turned into the sort of dialogue that, you know, maybe we hoped, but, so yeah, so I guess it's sort of, I guess I'm sort of curious, like, what's the, you know, like, you Bill Hybels, like, his thing was like the, you know, like the local church is the hope of the world, and and it was, you know, like, it was that same, like, how do we get people into church? And once they get to church, then they can hear the gospel and they can, you know, do all of that. And but there's a lot of people, more and more people, that are, that's not a useful thing anymore.
Yeah.
So what do you see church looking like moving forward? what's the role of the church? Because as I see, like, you have all these people that are curious, and you're like, well, sometimes people will pass through and stop by on a Sunday, and or they'll be local and visit on a Sunday, but that's, they're not, the real life doesn't meet what you're, so what can we do as a church then to, I don't even know exactly what the question is,
right.
But there's a like, but there's something there that I'm not sure, like, what do we just keep doing what we're doing and be welcoming, or is there something that we need to change in how we sort of receive people?
Well, I think the fact that people are coming says that you're doing something right, in that sure. There's a reason people are coming.
Sure.
People are, they're getting something from going to church. Now, I think if you were to press them and find out exactly what they're getting, it would be even difficult for the people who come to necessarily get that very clear or accurate. Uh-huh. But they are getting something. And I think so in the 80s and 90s with the seeker movement, I think people on the coasts are more cynical and jaded than people in the heartland. And part of what I think turned people off of a lot of the church growth methodology and the seeker methodology, which began on the West Coast, was this sort of this image that the church is a corporation that is just trying to get customers so it can get their time, attention, and money. And that suspicion, which is not wholly unfounded by people outside, has to be dealt with, because people will go to an AA meeting if they really want to get sober. People will go to the gym if they really want to stay fit. People will go to the restaurant if they really want to eat good food. Now, so one lens we can obviously look at this through is a consumerist lens, which has sort of been what the seeker movement looked at. But I think pivoting and seeing the church more as a community, rather than a religious service provider, is I think a good start, because that's actually what you have. You
right.
have people who, especially I see in Midwest churches like your own, that have histories, and the culture in the Midwest is quite different in many ways from culture on the coast. Although
sure.
that doesn't mean that these things are distinct. The people who come to Living Stones every Sunday, they certainly, to a degree, they come out of duty, but they mostly, I think, come out of joy, because they are getting something from it, and these are their people, and to not be there is like to not go to a family gathering that you really want to go to.
Yeah.
So obviously, I mean, that can get into, say, Robert Schuller's find a need and meet it. And uh-huh. obviously, as a church planter, that's way at the top of your priority list. But the church also has to deal with the question of where are we in people's mind and imagination. And when I look at, let's say, all of the feverish interest in orthodoxy following sort of downstream of Jonathan Pageau and some of the interest in orthodoxy now, a lot of what their motivation seems to be, which is by no means disconnected from a lot of evangelical churches, the church is a place that will help me grow my new and better self.
Yeah.
Orthodoxy, of course, will put that into terms like theosis or kenosis, you know, emptying oneself and filling oneself with God. And I think I don't see that as very, very different from a Protestant or evangelical framework. But part of what I think the seeker movement was very successful in more of a Christ haunted genre where there was at least some latent layers in people of, I should go to church. This has been a part of what made my grandparents' generation admirable and wholesome and healthy. And yeah, the lack of this, and I think that's very much still alive in the heartland, which is why yes, a lot of seeker stuff still works in the heartland.
Yes.
And on the coasts, it's just so much more cynical, and there's so much more skepticism. And yep, church so often, I look here in California, church so often to many people just looks like the enemy. Whereas a place in the heartland, and there are heartland patches in California, of course, we've got the Central Valley. People look at the church much more in the older alignment of saying, you know, if I would drink less, be a better father, and going to church is a part of that, which will help me with that, I could actually, you know, I could actually improve and become more of a person like I would like to be. And I think that's part of the reason churches, generally speaking, especially in the CRC, are doing better in more heartland locations.
Yeah.
And in sort of, you know, Houston is probably, everything's sort of on a spectrum between, let's say, coastland and heartland.
Sure.
Even though Houston's on the coast, it's also in the Bible Belt. So you're going to have some
different things. It's a whole different thing. But
so just the
memories,
head,
yeah, the memories of church are good.
Yes. Right? Yes.
The memory of it is, it's a good thing, you know, and whether you've embraced that or not. And that's sort of where this church is now. And, you know, we've got a lot of, you know, families, and I'll talk to other families. Well, how do you get young family? I don't know that we're doing anything except that we have them and nobody else does. And so like, maybe you hire them, but like, you know, there's all of these other, you know, small churches around, they don't, and they're, you know, and so when you're there and you kids come in and there's other kids there, more than anything, that's what's drawing people right now. And, you know, we don't have fancy programs, or, you know, our Sunday school teachers are wonderful and they're dedicated and they're there every week and they do a good job, but you're not going to mistake it for a Willow Creek Children's Program. But there's people here, and it's,
well, you know, I wouldn't fault you for that, though. Actually.
No, I know. I think that's a part of what's actually attractive to people, is that we're sort of the in between.
Yeah.
You know, we're not. It's not dying.
Right.
But it's not a corporation.
Right. Exactly. It's a community.
Yep.
And in this community, moms and dads will run Sunday school in the youth group and the cadet program or the GEMS program. And in the CRC churches that I see thriving, that's what's thriving.
Uh-huh.
That people have, they might not be able to articulate it very well. And they might even not be able to sell it very well, which often in churches feels like a liability. But given the cynicism of coastal culture, I think, which definitely impacts the heartland too, because media goes all over. But I think that authenticity and that reality is something that corporations keep trying to manufacture and fabricate and sell, but it's what you have. And when people see it, they say, yeah, this is me teaching Sunday school. And the dirty little secret about teaching Sunday school is, it's the teachers that learn more than the students. Because oftentimes people come into church, it's like, they need a Sunday school teacher. I don't know if I could teach Sunday school. Well, here's some materials you can work from that. So they get the materials and they start looking at it. And suddenly they now have to teach the Bible and the stories and all of that stuff. And so I've seen that over and over again, that it's the Sunday school teachers that are the ones that really start to grow in their faith.
Sure.
Because they're putting it all together. And so what you have in a church like you just described sounds like you have an authentic Christian community that is actually doing the work of the church.
Yeah.
And I'll take that hands down far and away over a a church that is just so glutted with professional staff.
Yeah.
I'd much rather have a church that is full of volunteers where people are figuring out how to do it, because the whole community just grows in that way.
Yep. Yeah. That's sort of some of the conversations we've been having. We have a couple teenagers that are, you know, really good musicians. And so they're up there every Sunday. We have like the youth led worship service once a month. And I think what I've noticed about that is that, you know, there's some churches where it's like, yeah, we need the kids, so I guess we have better let them up there and, you know, grit your teeth through it. And the difference I've noticed is that they're really glad that they're there and yep. enjoying it.
Yep.
And
yep.
Even if it's not their preference.
Yep. That's right.
That they know what the alternative is still. The people that have been here for a long time, they know what it was like 20 years ago.
Yep.
And this is better than that. So.
Yep. No, that's so true. And it's so healthy. It's also so real. I mean, and you know, I'm glad you told your story, because in many ways, I mean, this is your story too.
Yeah.
I mean, you were that guy who went to community college, you know, met your wife, but then suddenly you get into the church as an adult and something flips. Before, church was always just sort of given to you. And now suddenly it's like, well, wait a minute, where am I in this thing? And, you know, it's, you know, Rick Warren, Purpose-Driven Life's Rick Warren's Purpose-Driven Life. I remember reading that book and I thought, you know, this book is just one campy cliche after another, but you know, there's a lot of truth in those campy cliches, you know, sure. Every member a minister, that's what the church should be. And people are using their gifts and ministering in their own way. And, you know, with all of their quirkiness, you know, in terms of the internet and this little corner, we got lots of quirks. I mean, we major, but that's always been, every ministry that I have been involved with is just always so quirky. I just seem to draw interesting, quirky people to myself. And so in that way, maybe that's why ministry on the internet fits with me better than a lot of ministry in real life, because ministry in real life, a lot of normal people, they've only got so much tolerance for the quirks.
Sure.
The internet seems to have a lot more.
Yeah, that's the autodidact conversation you had, right? Like, what's the space for all of these weird people in church, and how do we do that? So,
yeah,
you only got a few minutes, but maybe that's the other thing, is if this sort of increasing curiosity about spirituality and Christianity is a growing thing, what should churches be doing to get ready for that? You have any sense of that?
You know, I look at the story of my father, who grew up in little Christian Reformed churches on the prairie, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Iowa, you know, went to Calvin College, was studying chemistry first, and then decided to turn to pre-sem, went to Calvin Seminary, and then went to Paterson, New Jersey, which, you know, thinking back on it now, of course, growing up, I never thought about it at all. But thinking back on it now, I think the only African-Americans my father probably ever saw growing up were probably porters on trains, because there weren't any in Vesper, Wisconsin. There weren't any in Lytton, Iowa. There weren't any in Hancock, Minnesota. I mean, Vesper, Wisconsin, Lytton, Iowa, and Hancock, Minnesota during the 30s and 40s were no place. I mean, and these were little farming CRCs. And so my father goes to Paterson, just outside of New York City. He doesn't know anything about Black folks. He doesn't know anything about New York City, urban country. My father comes in there probably in some ways green as all get out. But you know what he knows how to do? He knows how to love people.
Yeah.
And my guess is a church like yours knows how to love people. Mm. And what I've seen again and again in the church is, you don't need a lot of book smarts. You don't even need a lot of theology. You don't need a lot. If you have love, you're mostly there. Yeah. And you can, if you start with love and grow from there, almost anything good can grow. And so I think that there's too many things to try to learn if you're going to try to connect with people via expertise.
Yeah.
Because you can't predict all of the wonkiness and nerdiness and autodidactism that's out there. There's just way too much of it. So yeah. Where you start with is love. And no matter how strange most of the people are, people have a sense for love, and they will forgive. They will forgive ignorance. They will forgive campiness. They will forgive homeliness. They will forgive all of that stuff if there is love.
Yeah.
And that's the bottom line. That's where you always start.
Yeah.
So that's, I think churches like yours should, I know churches in this media saturated cultures where you can find mega churches all over the place, small churches feel inadequate. And I think any small church that knows how to love should not in any way feel adequate, because I will take a small struggling church that can't seem to mount any kind of thing that people out in the world would look at and say, oh, that's spectacular. No, if that church knows how to love, there, that's the heart of it. And if you have the heart, even if you die, if you have the heart, I don't think the church is sent out to do anything better than to love. It's 1 Corinthians 13. If you have not love, you got nothing. If you have love, everything else will be given to you.
So for sure.
Maybe that's a good way to end.
I think so.
Well, thank you, Eric. This has been delightful. I loved hearing your story. I mean, we met at Synod a little bit, and I know that you're on Twitter and you're in the comment section sometimes. And
I can dive into things too deep, so I sort of need to hold myself back sometimes before it takes up all of my time. So
you're a pastor of a busy church. You know, you shouldn't spend too much time on YouTube or Twitter or the internet. You've got much more important thing, and you're father of five kids who are still at home. So you've got a lot on your plate. I've got five kids, but they're all gone. And this, you know, I'm really grateful that for my local church, they've really embraced what I've done, and they've seen the fruit of it. And so they bless it. And they say, Paul, you go to it. So
yeah,
I'm blessed in that way.
Very good. Well, I appreciate you too. And I think, learned a lot from you, and appreciate you giving me something to do while I do the dishes too. So
well, good. And I'll keep doing the Randos conversation too.
There you go. I think that's a piece of what is, you know, really helpful. It's like you said, you can't be an expert on everything. And I think having that and keeping that a part of it, I think is what's, I think keeps drawing people in too, is that it's.
Yeah, definitely so. All right, Eric. It's great.
All right. Have a good afternoon.
All right. Take care.
Thanks, Paul.